Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper for the week of Sunday, April 24th, 2022. I'll begin with local news stories and then follow that with some local sports and then a few state articles that were published in the Standard Times. Texas high school principal says demands on teachers has reached breaking point. By Elena Edgen, published April 25th. In a moment normally reserved for applause and awards, school administrators got real during a Texas school board meeting when a high school principal brought teachers' concerns to light. Bill Waters, principal for Central High School in San Angelo, addressed the board late Monday, April 18th. In his 22-minute speech that has since gone viral on social media, Waters took to the podium to address several concerns plaguing teachers across SAISD and the nation. Instead of speaking about points of pride, he discussed the need for better pay, compensation, community support, mental health for students and staff, and time. As I thought about my presentation tonight, I was given direction to focus on points of pride, Waters said in the video. Yet it was not what I really thought should be shared, and I continued to think about doing something else. I am taking some liberties with my presentation tonight. Waters, an SAISD employee since his teaching career began 32 years ago, previously split his career into two periods, teaching and administration. Since COVID-19, that has changed. Until recently, I viewed my career as two phases, but that has changed, he said. I now view my career as pre-COVID and post-COVID. I believe that school will never be like it was prior to March of 2020. It has changed, and we have to make changes with it. How much longer can we operate at a high level with a pre-COVID mindset? His plea to the board has been played over 55,000 times on YouTube and has been shared by social media personality and Las Vegas teacher Sophia Bella on TikTok and Instagram, who has more than 3.5 million followers. The video has also made its way through teacher groups across Texas. Teachers struggle to meet demands, leading to further issues. Waters mentioned seeing an increase in mischievous behavior throughout the pandemic, a decrease in grade level maturity, and an increase in students struggling with mental health. Other concerns included higher failure rates and teacher retention. In a recent RAND survey, schools and school districts stated that addressing mental health needs of both students and staff ranked higher than student engagement, student attendance, and declining enrollment, he said. One topic Waters brought up was time. Often educators are asked to stay late, drive buses, and generally do more than what they were contracted for. Those summer months can also be filled with required trainings, seminars, certification tests, and teaching summer school. The demands on the teachers have drastically increased, Waters said. We cannot continue to ask that it needs to be done outside the workday. The day-to-day demands on teachers to meet, prepare, design, engage, contact, and serve has reached a breaking point. Teachers are struggling to get things accomplished at all levels, yet we continue to expect it. With these increased demands, teachers are struggling to keep up, Waters says. I have spent many hours this year, much more than ever before, talking to my staff about their personal and job-related issues, and I struggle to find the balance, Waters said. For the first time in my career, I had teachers quit in the middle of a year because they thought they had a better opportunity elsewhere that they felt would be better for their health and well-being. How can schools improve for teachers? During his speech, Waters offered solutions to his concerns. Time, pay, and compensation, mental health support for both staff and students, and community connection. For time, he suggested more staff-only days, early release days, or moving to a four-day school week. While it would require changes, he believes the benefits outweigh any negatives. Addressing pay, Waters urged the district to be competitive, give raises, and include compensation for sticking with SAISD. Recently, Waters has lost several teachers to competing districts, partially due to pay, he said. In addition, we have to pay staff for the extra, he said. We need to recognize that they're giving of their time and create additional stipends to do this. Part of the solution includes helping staff with child care by creating options, which could include building or utilizing a location for their children. As for mental health for students, Waters suggested looking at what works for other schools, along with providing awareness information for more on-site support. Our counselors already have a full load, and the increased needs of our kids cannot be added to our counselors, he said. Teachers' health benefits should include some visits with an outside counselor and discounts for mental health help, he said. Community support was also a point in his speech. While there are teacher appreciation days or teacher discounts before school begins, Waters believes there should be appreciation all year. We do things for new staff at the beginning of the year, but what about all year? He asked. Discounts at businesses, hosting staff and district appreciation events periodically throughout the year, and letting schools and staff know they're appreciated by asking local businesses to encourage their employees to reach out and thank a teacher. We need the positive majority that supports schools to stand up and be heard. School board's response: we are working on it. Max Parker, board president and member for District 5, addressed Waters' statement during the meeting. I don't disagree with anything you said, Parker said. We have been concerned about many of the things you've been saying. We, as a board, are looking at many of the things that you're discussing. I'm very concerned about our students, but I'm very concerned about our teachers. Parker said teacher salaries don't reflect their importance. As I've said many times, our country is very much out of whack when somebody like me, who's an attorney, makes much more than somebody who's a teacher. Because in the big scheme of things, a teacher is much more important to the future of our country than an attorney is, Parker said. Some of these things have got to change, and we've got to have more people recognizing our teachers, because without our teachers, our future is going to go right down the drain, because our kids are not going to be able to get the education that they deserve. He also addressed that universities and colleges are not getting as many students wanting to become teachers. Even if we meet everything you're wanting here, it's not going to be enough, in my opinion, Parker said. What are we going to do when there's not enough teachers? And there's not going to be enough nationwide for the foreseeable future. In response, Waters stated the district has to be competitive. Parker stated, we're competing against Walmart. We've got a lot of things we're competing against at this point. Amy Mazel Flint, board trustee for single member District 4, made a post regarding the speech Thursday via Facebook. In her post, she recognized Waters' message, which had started circulating social media. I agree with all that he said and promise that we are and have been working on some opportunities for our district to do more for our teachers. While we have increased starting teacher salaries $6,000 in the past 2 years, had a stipend for returning teachers this year, and are offering a stipend for teachers who complete the school year, I know it's more than just about the money. In the same post, she urged the community to support teachers and staff. Local businesses can help support our teachers too, Mazel Flint stated. Maybe offer a small discount or a free beverage or some other benefit in the name of a Thank a Teacher campaign. We have so many wonderful supporters of our schools. It would be so nice for teachers and bus drivers, custodians, school secretaries, nurses, and librarians to know that they are loved with small random thank yous throughout our community. In Waters' speech, he stated he believed there's a ton of support in the San Angelo community. Unfortunately, and quite often, we only hear the negative, he said. It is sad that a teacher has to keep a positive folder to remind them that there are those out there that think that they do a great job. They do this because when the negative comes these days, it can be much more harsh and disrespectful than ever before. We need to create connections in our community to celebrate our schools and our school district and our employees to create a larger sense of appreciation. How much does San Angelo ISD pay teachers? According to SAISD's financial transparency page, the average teaching salary for 2021 was $50,184, nearly $4,000 more than in 2017. While the average pay has increased, the average years of experience has gone down from 10.4 in 2017 to 7.7 in 2021. Comparing the average pay to nearby cities. Abilene ISD for new teachers offers $49,000 for the 2021-2022 school year. Teachers and librarians who stay receive $1,650. Midland ISD starts at $57,500 for 2022. That's up $1,000 from 2021. Ector County ISD for 2020-2021 offers $54,250 for new teachers. The average Texas public school teacher makes $59,811 as of March 29, 2022, according to salary.com. The typical range is between $52,211 and $69,061, varying by city, experience, and other skills, according to salary.com. The Texas Educators Association's minimum salary schedule for 2021-2022 listed inexperienced teachers start at $33,660 or $3,366 per month in a 10-month contract. The 10-month salary increases about $1,000 per year of experience. I began to have conversations with prospective teachers and staff over the last week or so, Waters said. Some, and I anticipate more, have asked questions regarding our school calendar, district pay raises, and incentive pay. While Waters urged the school board to improve, he added that educators will continue to do what they can for as long as they can. We will continue to break our backs to help kids. We'll spend our own money to help them achieve or continue to devote time and effort to make it happen because we want our kids to excel and shine in what we believe are great schools. But should we continue to do this, and will our staff continue to do this? There is no other profession that has these expectations without the support in the form of time, benefits, and compensation. Tom Green County Constable warns of phone scam involving impersonation of U.S. Marshal by Elena Egan, published April 26th. Local officials have notified the public of a scam call involving a person to be a U.S. Marshal, according to a release from Tom Green County Constable Precinct 4 on Monday, April 25th. The call comes from 325-718-2251. Which connects to a robotic voice and lists the local marshal office, which is unoccupied at this time, according to the release. I was notified that a person received a call from a U.S. marshal regarding a personal matter, Precinct 4 Constable Randy Harris stated in the release. The name of the U.S. marshal being used is from a person that retired years ago. If anyone receives a call, do not give out any information or return calls to the number. Also, do not give any money to this organization. Man enters plea in armed robbery, attempted carjacking in San Angelo. By Elena Edgen, published April 26th. A man has entered a plea deal a year after a San Angelo father and son were threatened with a gun in an attempted carjacking. About 9:30 a.m., Tuesday, April 26th, Aija Adadjevs attended a plea hearing via Zoom in the 340th District Court. Adadjevs was charged with robbery in Tom Green County, aggravated assault, and evading arrest. After a 30-minute delay, 340th District Court Judge Jay Weatherby called the case, which also included charges from Sterling County of obstruction, retaliation, and unauthorized use of a vehicle. During the hearing, Avdijev stated he is not a U.S. citizen, but has a permanent resident card. Court documents show he previously lived in Mississippi. Avdijev pleaded guilty to robbery, aggravated assault, obstruction, retaliation, and unauthorized use of a vehicle. In exchange for his plea, state prosecutors recommended he serve 4 years in prison for the robbery, assault, and obstruction cases. He would also spend 180 days in state jail for the vehicle charge, and the evasion charge would be dismissed. 340th District Judge Jay Weatherby accepted the offer and sentenced Adjajevs by the state's recommendation. Threats against father and son leads to cross-country chase. About 5 p.m. April 21st, police met with a 34-year-old man and a 12-year-old boy at the parking lot of San Angelo's Icon Cinema, 2020 North Bryant Boulevard. They stated a man, later identified as Aija Adjajevs, pointed a gun at them during an attempted carjacking. The man and boy were not injured. Officers found Avdijevs driving a gray Ford F-150 pickup nearby, and a 30-minute high-speed chase ensued. Members of the SAPD, Tom Green County Sheriff's Office, Texas Department of Public Safety, and Sterling County Sheriff's Office were involved. Avdijevs fled northbound on U.S. Highway 87 at more than 90 miles an hour, though the posted speed limit was 75. Sterling County deputies joined the chase along the Tom Green, Coke County line and noted the vehicle was traveling about 100 miles per hour, according to court documents. Law enforcement used spike strips, which punctured the pickup's front tires. Avdijevs drove about 2 more miles with smoking tires before pulling over near Broome, about 31 miles northwest of San Angelo. Officials told Avdijevs to leave the pickup, and after 5 minutes he did and was detained. Further investigation revealed the pickup had been reported stolen in McCulloch County earlier that day. Inside the pickup, officials found a stun gun, knife, and BB gun. As Avdijevs was being taken into the Sterling County Courthouse, he said, "I'm going to kill one of you, the one who pointed a gun at me," according to the Sterling County affidavits. Officials also stated he threatened an SAPD sergeant. A Tom Green County indictment charged Aija Avdijevs with robbery, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and evading arrest. The robbery and assault charges are second-degree felonies punishable by up to 20 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. The evasion charge is a third-degree felony punishable by up to 10 years in jail. Brown's Pool in San Angelo set to reopen on weekends leading up to summer. By Rosanna Frere, published April 26th. Brown's Pool in San Angelo is set to reopen on weekends leading up to summer, beginning Saturday, April 30th. The pool at 5301 Fruitland Farm Road has been a long-time summer tradition in San Angelo. It will be open 7 days a week, beginning Friday, May 27th. Call 325-653-5594 for information or to book a private party. Cost is $6 per person, ages 4 and older. Kids 3 and younger get in free with a paying adult. People can bring their own food and barbecue, but no drinks or glass containers are allowed. San Angelo family making the most of final days with daughter. By Rosanna Frere, published April 22nd. Chloe Salazar Gloria was surrounded by purple and white flowers while wearing a sequin pink dress for her extravagant 6th birthday ball. Her parents know she won't make it to her quinceañera. 2 years ago, Chloe was diagnosed with juvenile Huntington's disease, a rare and fatal condition that attacks the brain, causing unsteady and uncontrollable movements. The genetic disease is passed from parent to child, and it runs on both sides of Chloe's family. Her doctors mentioned speech was an issue around 18 months, but her mother, Natalie Salazar, thought her child was simply still developing. However, when Chloe had trouble with balance after joining a soccer league at 3 years old, Salazar began to suspect it was Huntington's. By the age of 4, Chloe stopped walking, began crawling again, and her speech was drifting. Her pediatrician told her parents to see a behavioral specialist in San Antonio. The doctor said that we needed to see a neurologist. I'm like, that'd be great, but it's hard to find a neurologist that would take her insurance, Salazar said. The family eventually went to the Children's Health Hospital in Dallas, where a team was assembled for Chloe. Salazar was asked what her concerns were and said, it's Huntington's. The doctors told her to slow down and said they would explore everything before coming to a conclusion that Chloe had the fatal disease, she said. But they soon confirmed her worst fears. I broke down for a minute, and then I had to pull myself together, Salazar said. I asked, what's next? What are y'all going to do for her to help her have a livable life where she can be comfortable? This disease was not unfamiliar to Salazar and her fiancé, Chloe's father, Hector Gloria. Salazar's grandmother had 10 siblings, 6 of whom had the disease. Huntington's doesn't have an age, she said. The oldest one was in his 90s when he was diagnosed. Gloria also lost family to the disease, most recently his mother in 2019, in her early 40s. Chloe's doctor said the next step was speaking to a genetic specialist, but they were concerned what it would reveal. They were worried about Hector because this would confirm that, scientifically speaking, it's coming from him, Salazar said. I had to take that into consideration because a lot of times when people find this out, they commit suicide. It's a hard thing for people to handle, and Hector never wanted to know. The tests came back and indicated 98% was coming from Gloria. Based on Chloe's tests, doctors gave her a prognosis of 4 to 6 years to live from the initial onset of symptoms. For us, that was at 3 years old, Salazar said. We were trying to process everything. It was really hard for me. This is your child, and they're dying. This is it. I don't know if people understand the severity of this disease, but it literally strips you away from everything. The couple has a 2-year-old daughter, Ariella, who is also at risk of having Huntington's. I was wanting to test her. I mean, might as well get the hurt over with and hit me where it hurts right now, Salazar said. But why do you want to know those results if there's nothing you can change? Huntington's slowly breaks down cells in the brain, causing behavioral issues, memory loss, seizures, and more. So far, Chloe has not suffered from seizures, but more from dystonia, which causes muscle stiffness. There's kids that get this disease as teens because 8 to 20 years old is considered juvenile for Huntington's, Salazar said. They start getting symptoms and don't know how to handle it. For Chloe, she's always been like this. She just doesn't know what's going on with her because this is her normal. I'm thankful this is just her normal. It's a slow death from Huntington's. Parents are usually bedridden with a feeding tube towards the final stages. We're on a time frame, Salazar said. In the meantime, Chloe is in a special education program at Reagan Elementary, attends rehab, and even does horseback riding at Sonrisas Trails. Salazar said she is constantly researching and spreading awareness of the disease. We need this disease to be known and out there in order to get medical trials for these kids, she said. There's not a lot of research or resources since this disease is so rare, and these doctors don't know much either, which makes it hard. Salazar said she's motivated to make the best of her daughter's life. I could be sad about this, or we can be thankful for the life she has, Salazar says. I'm a firm believer in God. We're not meant to be on this earth forever. I try to be strong, and I have a great support system, family, and people who just send out prayers and positive vibes. They are what keeps me going. How to help the family. Chloe and her family travel to Houston every 3 months and to Dallas every 6 months for appointments. Although Medicaid helps with medical bills, it doesn't pay for gas or hotels, Salazar says. I'm grateful for people who give us presents and toys, but there's so many I haven't even opened yet, Salazar said. I hate to ask for money, but traveling is expensive. The family is holding a fundraiser at noon on April 23rd, selling enchilada plates for $10 at 2202 Greenwood Street on a first-come, first-served basis. I try to do plate sales instead of asking for money because at least I know I'm working my butt off and putting in the effort, Salazar said. The family is raising money to travel to a conference in California called Help for HD. Parents and kids who are affected get to talk with these doctors that are studying Huntington's at the conference, Salazar said. Aside from conferences, the family wants to travel while they still have time. They have been to Disney World and are now working on a Cancun vacation while Chloe is still healthy. Next year, or even 3 months from now, this could plateau and then boom, it could take off, Salazar said. We want to make these memories and enjoy her while we can. From fighting their own fight, Salazar wants to help others in the battle. At the beginning of this, I didn't know where to go or who to turn to, she said. I hope people know they can reach out to me and know they aren't alone. Stay updated with Chloe's journey on her Facebook page, Keeping Up with Chloe. People interested in donating can Venmo or Cash App Salazar at NRENESALAZAR. New Orleans is coming to San Angelo with Coffee House and Big Easy Classics by Elena Edgen, published April 22nd. Continuing the explosion of coffee businesses across the San Angelo area, the newest upcoming coffee house promises Louisiana classics and style. PJ's Coffee of New Orleans, a franchise that started in 1978, has locations throughout Louisiana, New Jersey, and most southern states, including Texas. One of several opening franchise locations will be at 2902 South Bryant Boulevard in San Angelo, according to its website. This location was previously a Shell convenience store. The menu includes hot and frozen blended coffees, teas, smoothies, and hotter cold chocolate made with Ghirardelli chocolate. Food options include pastries, breakfast sandwiches, beignets, and sandwiches for lunch. There is also the option to make it Eat Fit, which alters drinks and smoothies for customers wanting lighter choices. This includes no added sugar in coffee or tea, fat-free milk, or less than a teaspoon of added sugar in smoothies and blended coffees. For anyone seeking an early taste of its coffee, the business sells bags of coffee beans at pjscoffee.com. There are 14 other Texas locations, including Monahans, Round Rock, San Antonio, Dallas, and Houston, along with a planned location in Odessa. For more information on PJs, visit the business at PJs Coffee, PJScoffee.com, or on Facebook or Instagram. Now moving to local sports. West Texas schools combined for 7 titles at UIL State Tennis Tournament by Paul Harris and Charles Bryce, published April 28th. San Antonio. Concho Valley athletes returned home with 7 state titles Wednesday from the UIL Tennis State Championships in San Antonio. Mason's 3 state titles were secured before the day began after the school locked up all Mason finals in boys' doubles, girls' doubles, and mixed doubles in the 2A bracket. The Punchers and Cowgirls now have 107 state titles over the years. Wall claimed 2 state titles, while Reagan County and Sterling City each added another. Wall Jr. Payne Smith defended his state title in 3A boys' singles with 6-1, 6-0 win over Idaloo's Logan Randall. I was really able to hit my shots through the back part of the court, and I was able to get to the net easy and really be on offense most of the time, Smith said. I was never really on defense. Meanwhile, Wall's boys' doubles teams of Bryson Hurt and Jack Duncan won their first gold medals with 6-4, 6-3 win over Piester's Levi Wirtman and Toby Ellis. Reagan County's mixed doubles of Cheyenne Darr and Ethan Kuykendall gave their school back-to-back 3A doubles state titles with a 1-6, 6-3, 6-2 win over Grosbeck's Emily Menzel and Blaine Sadler. Darr also won state last year, teaming with Delaney Yanez to win the 3A girls doubles title. I was so proud of both of them, Reagan County coach Tracy Tatum Smith said. They're both seniors and they had a phenomenal year. Cheyenne's a good basketball player, and in team tennis, they both did what they needed to do for our team. Cheyenne played girls' doubles, and Ethan played boys' doubles to help our team, but on such short notice after team tennis, they wanted to play together, and they just made a phenomenal team. It's been a lot of fun to watch them improve and just get better and better with every match they played. They might lose the first set, but they're fighters and they leave it all out on the court. The Owls' senior duo got off to a slow start, but they fought through it with dogged determination. Every championship we've been in, we've always lost the first set, but it was just kind of getting in a groove, and especially being undefeated this season, we kind of had the nerves, but it was great, Darr said. The Reagan County team developed great chemistry on the court this spring. It's been a blast, Kuykendall said. It's different than what I'm used to, but Cheyenne and I clicked and we were pretty much unbeatable. I'm not going to say I was expecting it, but I had really high hopes playing with Cheyenne. We played our hardest and we came back with the championship, and I guess that's all that matters. Sterling City sophomores Jonathan Monreal and Rowdy Ferguson won the 1A boys doubles title after being a few points away from losing the match. They rallied from a 1-set deficit and survived a 2nd-set tiebreaker to win 5-7, 7-6, 6-2 over Rock Springs' Ethan Hyde and Hunter Oliver. I think it shows that we have a lot of heart, and whatever happens, we fight to the end, Monreal said. I think we represented our school well, and it shows our hard work and dedication. Ferguson added, I think that since we're sophomores, we're just going to get better and better, and hopefully we'll do it 3 times. Wall's girls doubles team of Avery Jamison and Andy McCaslin, who had an exciting 3-set comeback win in the semifinals Tuesday, fell short 6-1, 6-4 in their gold medal match against Piester's Bailey Gilbert and Perla Dunn. Payne Smith said the Wall boys and girls developed a lot of chemistry as the season progressed. The first part of the season, we didn't all click, and we really got through it, and we've all become brothers and sisters, the 2-time 3A boys singles titleist said. We do anything for each other, and it's great to see the success coming through. Mason's boys doubles team of Jack Gillespie and Robert Aguero outlasted teammates Jay Alschwede and Balen Kerr, 6-4, 2-6, 6-4, in the championship. We've been fighting against them all year, Gillespie said. They beat us at both district and regionals, so we were on a mission today, and we got it done. It's often said in sports that it's hard to beat the same team three times in a season, and that was the case for Allschwede and Kerr. We knew all the pressure was on them, Aguero said. They're a senior and a junior, and we were just a sophomore and a junior, first year playing varsity tennis. The Cowgirls duo of Jacqueline Zermino and Reagan Norman topped Mason teammates Lucy Rochat and Kinsley Jordan, 6-2, 6-2, for the 2A girls doubles title. Playing your own teammates is never easy. It's tough because you're friends outside the court, but whenever you step on the court, you have to act like you've never played them before, Zermino said. It's hard because we play them every single day in practice. You've just got to go out there and do your thing. Norman won the title with a different partner last year, and Zermino was on the losing end of a 3-hour, 45-minute marathon. It was so intense and exhausting, Norman said of the 2021 2A girls doubles state title match. It was probably the worst match I've ever played, but we won. Norman is one of five seniors on Mason's team, and she's very appreciative of playing for the winningest team in Texas. It's been great, the Cowgirls senior said. Mason tennis has taught me a lot about confidence, keeping your cool, and staying calm and sportsmanship, and really just how to be a leader. I'm very thankful that I got to be a part of this program, and I'm also thankful that I got to play with Jacqueline and I got to end on a win. Mason's mixed doubles team of Kylie Ake and Mason Hatfield battled back for a 2-6, 7-5, 7-5 nail-biter against teammates Sterling Smith and Tate Spencer. Head coach Cade Smith put things in perspective about having players going up against each other in the state finals. I'd say it's definitely harder than what people think, the Mason coach said. Coach Selah Smith, Eckert, his sister, and I get the opportunity to watch those teams play each other that we've watched all year long. You want to coach them and you want to help them. And then at the end of it, you're really, really happy for the people who won it. And you're really, really sad for the ones that didn't. It's a good problem to have. I'm really pleased with the outcome of the whole tournament. And I'm just happy that we're able to be in that position. Erien County's mixed doubles team of Melanie Rainey and Tati Cormier lost in the 1A mixed doubles final 6-1, 7-5 against Utopia's Cherish Dunlap and Will Lehman. The first set, we were kind of out of it, just those state jitters, Cormier said. But then the second set, we came back and almost won it. I was really hoping it would go to a third set. I think we fought for everything we could. It just wasn't our day, but I'm looking forward to next year. I'm a junior, and my partner's a sophomore. The Erien County duo tipped its hat to the Utopia team. Those two are fantastic players, Rainey said. The boy on that team has a wicked topspin ball, and that girl is fantastic at the net. She stays in the rallies with us. They were all around a really good team. Rainey felt more comfortable in her second trip to state. Last year, I was really, really nervous, Rainey said. I came in girls' singles, and this year had the opportunity for Tati and I to get together, and I thought that would be a really fun experience. Last year, it was mentally exhausting to be all by myself, and this year, Tati has really helped me and encouraged me to have fun this year. Cristobal's Blake Jenkins lost 6-1, 6-1 in the 2A girls' singles final to Albany's Sarah Cotter. Despite coming up short in the finals, Jenkins left the Alamo City with a big smile on her face after having to settle for a third-place finish last year. That's the same girl I played last year in the semifinals, Jenkins said. She beat me in the semifinals last year. I got to play her again in the finals, so that was pretty cool. It was my senior year, and I was able to relax a little bit. I just thought, let's have some fun, and what happens, happens. And so I think that helped me a lot. I met up with Mason yesterday, Cheney White's in the semifinals, and I probably played the best tennis I've played, so I'm super excited about that. I just think it was more fun this time. I'm super excited, and I couldn't end my senior year better. San Angelo Central gymnast Vogel wraps up career in state meet event finals, by Charles Bryce, published April 23rd. San Angelo Central senior Madison Vogel finished up her brilliant career by placing first on uneven bars and floor exercise during the event finals Saturday at the Texas High School Gymnastics State Championships in Rockwall. Vogel scored a 9.825 on uneven bars for a third day total of 29.625. Central's Kara Baker was third on after scoring 9.60 for a 29.25 total. And teammate Caroline Steele placed seventh with a 9.50 for a 28.95 total. Vogel earned a 9.875 on floor Saturday for a total of 29.675. And Baker was second, 9.75, 29.50 total. On vault, Vogel got a 9.75 for a 29.20 total to finish second behind Euless Trinity's Jarrah Hill, 9.75, 29.225 total. Baker finished second on balance beam after getting a 9.60 for a 29.15 total behind Hill, 9.775, 29.475 total. Central's Daniela De La Cruz, 9.60, 28.85 total, took seventh on beam, and Vogel was eighth, 9.175, 28.80 total. The Lady Cats were coming off their 12th state championship on Friday, and Vogel won the all-around title for the third time. The top 10 finishers in each event after Thursday and Friday qualified for Saturday's event finals. The Central boys did not have any qualifiers for day three. Baseball. Wall Hawks blank Brady Bulldogs in 6-3A, by Amy McDaniel, published April 28th. Wall High School bested Brady 10-0 in five innings in a District 6-3A baseball game at home Tuesday. The Hawks improved to 20-6 overall and 12-1 in district play. They came into the game in a tie atop the district standings with Jim Ned, which played Clyde on Tuesday. Nathan Pepper got the win on the mound for the Hawks. He allowed one hit in the shutout and struck out two. Luke Kemp had three RBI for the Hawks, while Matt Steen drove in two. Will Schur also drove in a run for Wall. The game was a scoreless tie until the Hawks broke out for four runs in the third inning. They added another in the fourth inning before platting five in the fifth to close out the game. Hayden Baronet was on the mound for Brady. He gave up four runs on four hits over three innings, striking out two and walking one in the loss. Braden Garza had the Bulldogs' lone hit. Wall closes out the district schedule with the game at Merkel on Friday. Brady, 11-9-1, 7-6 in district, hosts Clyde Friday. Angelo State football legend Clayton Weishen killed in crash, by Charles Bryce, published April 23rd. Note, updated to include confirmation from the Texas Department of Public Safety report. Angelo State University football legend Clayton Weishen, who played in the NFL with the New England Patriots and Green Bay Packers, was killed in a motor vehicle accident near his hometown of Wall on Friday, April 22nd. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety report, Weishen was driving a 2001 Dodge 2500 pickup northbound on McCulloch Road, 4.3 miles northwest of San Angelo, at 7.05 p.m., when, for an unknown reason, the driver drifted into the east ditch, overcorrected, skidding across the roadway into the west ditch and into a dirt field. The vehicle then began to roll over to the right and came to rest upright, facing south, the report stated. The driver was ejected from the vehicle during the crash. The posted speed limit is 60 miles per hour, and Weishen was not wearing a seatbelt. The conditions were clear, cloudy, and the road conditions were dry. No other vehicles were involved, and there was only one occupant of the pickup. He was pronounced dead at the scene by Tom Green County Justice of the Peace, Susan Werner. After a stellar career at Wall High School, Wyshyn became an All-American linebacker at ASU. His Rams career lasted from 1978 to 81, and Wyshyn was selected as the Lone Star Conference Lineman of the Year in 1980 and 1981. He helped the Rams win the 1978 NAIA Championship, which still stands as the only national championship that ASU has won in football. Wyshyn was drafted in round 3 of the 1982 NFL draft by the Patriots. Despite the fact that New England has won 6 Super Bowl championships since Wyshyn's playing days, his single-season franchise record of 229 tackles set in 1983 still stands today. The 6'2", 220-pounder suffered a severe knee injury in the first week of the 1984 season, and he was sidelined the rest of the season and all of the 1985 campaign. In their first Super Bowl appearance, the Patriots lost to the Chicago Bears at the Super Bowl after the 1985 season, but Wyshyn was injured and wasn't able to play. 4 games into the 1986 season, Wyshyn suffered a hamstring and groin injury and missed the rest of the Patriots games. He was traded to the Packers in 1987, and he played 7 games in Green Bay before calling it a career at the young age of 27. As reported by Mike Lee in a 2015 Standard Times article, Wyshyn registered 21 tackles in a 7-0 victory against New Orleans in 1983 in the sleet and snow, and he had 20 against the San Francisco 49ers 2 years after the Bill Walsh dynasty started. Wyshyn's former head coach at ASU, the late Jim Hess, said in that 2015 article, "Well, son of a gun, I guess he really could play. Holy cow, I didn't know any of that. I just knew he was the best I ever coached." After hanging up his cleats, Wyshyn returned home to Wall and began farming in the West Texas cotton patch 15 miles outside of San Angelo, where he played his college ball. In a national list published in 2015 by Boston.com titled 11 Athletes Whose Careers Were Derailed by Injuries, Wyshyn was ranked number 8, Lee reported. The list also included multi-sport standout Bo Jackson, NBA players Grant Hill, Bill Walton, and Penny Hardaway, and baseball players Kerry Wood, Mark Pryor, and Tony Colagliaro. The Boston.com article said this of Wyshyn: "Despite essentially having a 2-year career, his impact on the record books is still felt today." Now we'll move to state news, as published in the San Angelo Standard Times. California man allegedly lured 80 children into making porn, including 10 in Texas. The Associated Press published April 27th, Sacramento, California. A Northern California man was arrested for allegedly posing as a young girl on social media and convincing more than 80 children, including 10 in Texas, to make pornographic videos, authorities said Tuesday. 2 of the victims were a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old in Robstown, according to the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office. There were also 4 in Houston, 2 in Dallas, 1 in Garland, and 1 in Mercedes. Demetrius Carl Davis, 24, was booked Tuesday in a Sacramento County on suspicion of committing a lewd or lascivious act with a child under 14, according to the county sheriff's office website. In 2020 and 2021, Davis allegedly posed as a prepubescent girl named Lizzie to lure and groom children 6 to 13 years old, the sheriff's office said. He allegedly befriended children and sent them child pornography, authorities said. After establishing a relationship with a child, Davis would direct them to produce child pornography, depicting themselves engaging in sexual acts with their siblings or other children known to them, sheriff spokesperson Rodney Grassman said in a news release. A search of Davis' Sacramento County home last December turned up sexually explicit digital recordings featuring children, Grossman said. Investigators have identified more than 80 alleged victims in the United States, and there may be at least 15 others or more internationally, for a total of at least 100 child victims, Grossman said. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is helping with the international investigation. Davis remained jailed without bail. It wasn't immediately clear whether he had an attorney who could speak on his behalf. Analysis. Every so often, Texas government needs a reboot. By Ross Ramsey, Texas Tribune, published April 27th. One parable about problem solving is about how to load rocks into a truck or a big box. Start with the boulders, then the stones, then the pebbles. Get the order wrong and the container gets full before the rocks are all in. Get the order right and the pebbles fill in the spaces around the stones, and the stones fill in spaces around the boulders. Do the big stuff first, the little stuff last. What if government worked like that? It happens once in a while, just as a reminder of the power of collective community action, the basic idea behind government, and of what's possible. But it doesn't happen often enough in the normal course of government business. It happens when the normal course of business is interrupted, either by events or on purpose. Texas has a 30-year-old example to consider. Comptroller Bob Bullock, running for lieutenant governor, proposed a performance review of state government, and his successor, John Sharp, actually put it together and made it a full-time operation in his agency. Sharp also made a public appeal for government that works better and costs less, a way to involve voters and raise the stakes for lawmakers who might be reluctant to go along. The idea was simple. Reconsider everything the state is doing, try to make it more efficient, weed out things that don't work, propose new ideas, save money where possible, and remake it all into something better. The first review included recommendations to consolidate state agencies and privatize some state services, among other things. Sharp, who is now the chancellor of the Texas A&M University System, said adopting all of it would free more than $8 billion for savings or other state programs. The legislature didn't like all of the ideas, but went along with a lot of it. Political work is about vision, about setting goals, about winning public support so you can make laws with those goals in mind. The performance reviews were more about how things work, partly to free up money and other resources that could be used for other government and agencies, partly just to make things work better. It's an exercise in separating the operation of government, how things work, from the direction of government, what, in broader terms, government should do. The nuts and bolts on one hand, the vision thing on the other. Big organizations need a kick in the pants every so often. Spring cleaning, reconsideration, a good hard questioning about what's working, what's not, whether the goals now are what they used to be, a shakeup. I think it is always a good idea to review the efficiency and cost effectiveness of state programs, says Billy Hamilton, the deputy chancellor and chief financial officer of the Texas A&M University System. He was Sharp's deputy comptroller in 1991 and managed the first and subsequent reviews. The performance review made state government better. It introduced new ideas and approaches. It shook things up and became a national model. Over time, programs build up plaque. There's always a need to remove the buildup, or at least ask hard questions. They save some money, freeing up billions that were tangled in various programs for use in other parts of the state budget, a critical selling point at the time because state finances were pinched and the legislature was trying to write a budget that didn't cut programs dear to voters. There was a lot of squirming in the executive branch of government. That's where most of the state's programs and services are. But it was useful enough that the federal government and other state governments copied it. California even borrowed Hamilton to help run its effort. It gradually played out as the offerings became less and less bold. You can make a splash with the first set of recommendations, but each subsequent effort is a little weaker than its predecessor, and deals made to pass various ideas also get in the way. An idea shelved in trade for something else. Give up this idea and we'll approve that one. Can't be brought back 2 years later. A deal is a deal. When Sharp moved on, the next comptroller, Carol Keaton Rylander, picked up the performance reviews. But she was considered, properly, as a political competitor to then-Governor Rick Perry, and lawmakers had grown weary of the biennial flood of proposals from the comptroller's office. The legislature took them away, putting performance reviews in the hands of the Legislative Budget Board, where they have faded into an all-but-forgotten exercise, largely ignored by lawmakers. The state's performance reports have been effectively buried, but there are lots of places where state government operations could use a scrubbing. That might free up some money. It might just make things work better, get rid of some of the underperforming programs, and add some things policymakers would like to do. It's a way to get away from the small rocks, the noisy little ideas of most political campaigns, and onto the big stuff every Texan knows about and hopes will be addressed by the elected folks in Austin. Good schools, good roads, a strong safety net, fair taxes, and all the rest. The Boulders. Editor's note. Ross Ramsey worked in the office of the Texas Comptroller from 1996 to 1998. Here is our weekly column from Allison Watkins. Tips for adding spring color to your yard during a drought. Published April 21st. The dry spring weather has some gardeners cutting back on the amount of flowers and vegetables they usually like to plant this time of year. One way to still add some vibrant spring color for the front of the home and grow productive vegetables on a smaller scale is to plant in containers. Potted plants do require more frequent attention than plants in the ground. Since the pots are exposed to the wind and sun, they can dry out faster. That doesn't mean they have to waste a lot of water. Be creative and come up with some ways to recycle water from household use to supplement irrigation. Dip out dishwater from the sink. Use a bucket to catch some water in the shower while it's heating up. Pour out leftover ice from an ice chest into a planter. Divert gray water from the washing machine. Every drop counts. Also, use mulch. Its benefits are not limited to garden beds. Mulch can be useful for containers to keep roots cool and prevent evaporation, allowing the root systems to have access to more water. If weeding isn't your favorite gardening chore, then potted plants are a great way to go. Container-grown flowers and vegetables have very few, if any, weeds. Don't use real soil for potted plants. Get peat moss-based potting mix. Potting mix does not have weed seeds like real soil does and maintains a better structure for potted plant roots. Compost can be added to potting mix, but don't add more than a third of the volume of the container. At least two-thirds of the mixture needs to be potting mix soil substitute to provide the best foundation for roots. Some good choices to try for annual color on a porch or patio include pentas, ice plant, petunia, begonia, moss rose, marigold, and zinnia. Vegetables that do well in containers include patio tomatoes, peppers, cucumber, sweet potatoes, and squash. For the larger vining vegetables, plant in a large container and leave room around the planter for the plant to trail down and out. The Concho Valley Master Gardeners are hosting a container gardening workshop on Saturday, April 30th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Tom Green 4-H Center. Participants will learn info to help them have beautiful and successful container plantings and will get to plant and take home a container for the patio. Cost to attend is $30 and pre-registration is required. To sign up, visit https://txmg.com/ www.texasa.org/Concho Valley. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.